Hello everyone. This session is dedicated to the OPSI-OECD government aftershock event, which is on the 17th and the 18th of November. This event is about discussing the government reform that is to take place post-COVID. So COVID came and shocked us all out of our systems. We're able to look at the policy overhauls that we were pausing for a long time, and it created an accelerator for us to be able to push forth a lot of agenda in government reform. One of the very important things that it shed light on, and I think for me personally, I think it is an area that we would need to examine very closely, is leading with empathy. And how that means when it translates into values of any organization that we work with, the importance of that, and how crucial it is to decision making. Being in public purpose organizations, our aim is to be able to devise policies and programs that help make people's lives better. Many times, because of bureaucracy. And, you know, being stuck in the way that things were done, we find ourselves stalling even when these policies are, you know, either you know, they've taken a long time to come to place or, you know, we've done, you know, massive consultation sessions with the public and advisors to reach to that such policies. But then they get stuck somewhere. And I think the difference is in what we see right now is that people are leading with empathy, knowing that the choices that they will be making will take into consideration solely how people feel and what their best interest is. And that is being able to be compassionate and understanding of the people's situation. We cannot make decisions without thinking about how people feel. And I think that just really emphasized a lot of things, like policies with lockdown, for instance, how governments decided to perform lockdown policies, who was consulted in that process, and have they taken into consideration the impact on mental health, the impact on children being away from their friends at school, the impact on mothers who are working from home, fathers who are working from home, people who are dealing with anxieties and mental struggles. So also people who have, let's say, daily incomes that cannot be replaced. So looking at the community when you do a policy like that, or a policy response to a situation, I think one of the very important things that come to the forefront of this discussion is how we looked at that with a deep understanding of not only the state's accountability to its people, because this is what a lot of times the legislature looks at, is like, what is their accountability and how this would reflect on the government on the long term. In the medium term to long term, but have they thought about the impact on the person? I think now it is about leading with courage, being able to, as policymakers, understand, do the full-fledged analysis of how this impacts people, but also be able to break that barrier of political agenda and you know, political parties and you know, looking after the current government constituents as opposed to the people or the nation. You see that with you know, the examples of New Zealand, who have risen very well from the first wave of this virus and were able to substantiate their policy making through being able to look at people with a lens of compassion. I think we're dealing with humans, we're dealing with people who are impacted by emotions. That is a discussion that will come to the forefront of policymaking, and that is for me. Also, I think one of the very important things that people will start looking at is collaborative policy making. How do you involve everyone? Citizen-centric government and real-time citizen-centric government, where people are able to voice their opinion and be heard on the spot. How do you make the digital government so receptive to people on real time? More and more people should be encouraged as well to be involved in the decision making process, and the voice of the citizen should be higher than the voice of the political parties and political ideologies that are represented within those parties, and it should be down to the people. One other thing that I personally believe is going to be a trend is moving away from right wing and left wing ideology to thinking about just working and leaving the, as they say, leaving the political ideologies and understandings and beliefs at the door of every government organization, to actually thinking about making people's lives better, irrespective of their backgrounds or beliefs or ideologies. And I think that it has also, within recent events, has shown how, you know, people are looking at inclusion more and more. The divisiveness has you know, been going on for the past few years with some, you know, a number of foreign policy, you know, a number of foreign policies that were carried out by certain countries, for instance, and that had caused a populism movement across Europe, for instance, and the US and whatnot. And that is also an unnatural movement that people feel that they need to come back to equilibrium. They need to come back to being okay with the other. They need to come back to understanding and appreciation and acceptance of others. And that is coming down to human nature. So I think for me, it's about, you know, not only a human-centered type of governance, but also on a deeper level, an understanding and empathetic government that speaks for its people and does not speak for its people. I mean, reflects its people's voices. And you can only get attuned to that because you can, you know, you get lost in the bureaucracies of work and the office, that you sometimes forget about what you were here to do in the first place. So I think coming back to being human as leaders, coming back to being human as a government, and ensuring that the values of the people in the nation are always being reflected, and they are the forefront drivers of the policy making. You see that you see that affecting foreign policy, but also it should be reflected in the nation's policy and internal policies that guide and govern the nation. And with issues like taking also culture into consideration, that's something that will come up. How do you go from global to local or global? You're talking about there was globalization for a while, and now there is the importance of looking at local wisdom. How do you derive your policies from local wisdom, tapping into the wisdom of the communities that this government is serving? It's very important that we go back to the roots and find out how these communities think, how they thrive, how they live, and drive it from the bottom up, a grassroots kind of policy making that serves the values of the people. And that is something that will continue making sure that every government is the face of its people, as opposed to, you know, people, a government working for agendas that were preset. I think we will see also people moving away from serving political agenda to serving the people for and their values and driving that forth. What I think we'll also see is a sense of unity. We'll understand a bit more about how the world works. What we also want to see is more collaboration, like the event that is now being created by the OECD. Observatory for Public Sector Innovation, where local communities are allowed to come to the global scene. The reach for this event and, you know, the access that they've had to using social media platforms for this event on an organization like UPSI is, I think, will drive forth the new way forward, the new way of thinking of collaborative grassroots type of organization, you know, of quasi-governmental organizational contribution to decision making. I think that's also a trend that we'll see, is that more voice and more more weight will be given to grassroots organizations, to NGOs, to think tanks on the ground. And then with the heavy access and reach that the technology is giving to different parts of every country, to be able to voice their concerns on a global level and be able to shape government direction across the globe. And with central organizations like OECD that will be able to devise other governments on what's best practice, will also be a very interesting, maybe even a start or an instigator for this grassroots movement, because the ultimate aim is to continue making this a local movement. And by creating that kind of first-time type of events or first-time type of involvement in public sector innovation, public sector policy making and decision making, I think it would give a lot of room for understanding the power behind local wisdom. One thing I think we would like to keep is that how connectivity has changed with COVID, and how people are having access to, you know, they're being able to maintain, let's say, the quality of their lives and the steadiness of their lives, and still be able to contribute to workforce, be able to contribute to events, to forums. That I think we would like to see continue, and I think we would see a trend, the impact of that on being able to cut costs for organizations, governments, even individuals, being able to also have access at your own time and with the least amount of change towards your life, and with optimum work-life balance. Now there is that debate of has this given people better work-life balance, or has that impacted them? Now, it holds to the two sides of the story hold, where people at home with the children being at home are finding it very difficult to do work and home at the same time. And that's where that kind of policy needed, or lockdown policies needed, that kind of revision and empathy and compassion towards understanding the stress behind. Being able to, you know, needing to manage both at the same time, home and work. And with that, a better informed policy would have been, whether it providing some kind of assistance or support, or not even lockdown, and maybe in some countries where it's possible to utilize herd immunity as opposed to lockdown, really depending on the situation. But then the policy would have been devised per population. So if we're talking about the sick and the elderly, how do you cater to them? You open up homes or centers for that and ask them to, you know, or provide free services where they are catered to in certain homes, so they're taken care of away from danger. And then you allow the rest of the community to continue their lives normally. That could be an option. But I think the most important thing is that we would like to keep at grassroots level and at government level, being able to have to tap into that technology that would make our lives better. But policymakers need to keep in mind how that technology is being used. And I think it should be self-driven. So give people the ability to decide if they want to go back to work full time, and if they want to go back to work part time, if they would like to continue with different modalities of work. I think, you know, we should, as governments, back off from creating new frameworks and programs and let it be initiated by people. Now they have tried and tested and they know what worked and what didn't work for them. So I think more collaboration in terms of understanding how people want to live their lives for the next while and allowing them to devise the way forward, allowing them to create what works for them. So modalities that work for them. I think this is what we would do differently and should do differently. Increase, if I would summarize that, I think would increase citizen engagement. We would increase people's contribution to decision making, and not only contribution, but I think it should be derived by people. Policies and programs should be driven by people, by communities, by local communities, and wisdom should be derived from local communities to wisdom and values to devise policy making for the next while. And I think that would work better for humanity. It serves humanity on so many levels. And we make sure that we continue with giving people our best as policymakers, making sure that we involve them and making sure that they are not only heard, but that they are actually driving forth the way forward. I hope you've enjoyed the session, and I look forward to contributing some more with the OPSI-OECD Aftershock Program. Please do attend the second day, which will be on the 18th, with a number of very interesting panels that will be going on. Thank you very much for your time.